Midnight for Charlie Bone, Children of the Red King, number 1. Written by Jenny Nimmo and read by Simon Russell Beale.
Prologue. Long, long ago, a king arrived in the north. They called him the Red King, for he wore a scarlet cloak and his shield was emblazoned with a burning sun. It was said that he came out of Africa. This king was also a marvelous magician, and each of his 10 children inherited a small part of his power. But when the king's wife died, 5 of his children turned to wickedness, and the other 5, seeking to escape the corruption that surrounded their evil siblings, left their father's castle forever. Broken-hearted, the Red King vanished into the forest that covered the kingdoms of the north. He did not go alone, however, for he was followed by his 3 faithful cats, leopards to be precise. We must never forget the cats. The manifold and fabulous powers of the Red King were passed down through his descendants, often turning up quite unexpectedly in someone who had no idea where they came from. This is what happened to Charlie Bone, and to some of the children he met behind the grim, grey walls of Bloor's Academy. Charlie hears voices. On a Thursday afternoon, just after tea, Charlie Bone saw smoke. He happened to be looking out of his window when a dark cloud lifted above the autumn trees. The wind blew it south and it moved through the sky like a great floating whale. Somewhere on the other side of the city, there was a fire. Charlie could hear a fire engine racing towards it. He had no idea that in mysterious and unexpected ways, he was connected to it, and would soon be drawn to the place where it had begun. Charlie slept well, got up next morning and went to school. After school, Charlie and his friend Benjamin Brown walked home together as usual. The cloud of smoke had gone, but the sky was stormy and dark. A fierce wind sent red and gold leaves bowling down Filbert Street. Benjamin crossed the road to number 12, while Charlie stopped at number 9. Most of the people who lived at number 9 complained about the large chestnut tree in front of it, how dark it made their rooms, how damp and creaky it was, and how it would probably fall on the roof one day and kill them all in their beds. Needless to say, no one at number 9 did anything about it. Complaining to each other was as far as they went. They were that sort of family, or rather, those sorts of families. As Charlie ran up the steps to his front door, the tree sighed and rained a handful of conkers onto his head. Luckily, his thick, springy hair softened the blows. Thick hair had its uses, though not many. Charlie was always being told to smarten himself up, an impossible task for someone with hair like a hedge. "Hello, grandmas," Charlie called as he stepped into the hall. There were 2 grandmas at number 9. Grandma Jones was Charlie's mother's mother, and Grandma Bone was Charlie's father's mother. Grandma Jones was round and cheerful and bossy, while Grandma Bone only spoke to complain. She rarely smiled and nothing made her laugh. Her hair was thick and white and she wore long, stiff garments in shades of black, grey or brown, never pink, which was Maisie's favourite colour. Grandma Jones liked to be called Maisie, but Charlie wouldn't have dared to call Grandma Bone by her first name, which was Griselda. She liked to remind people that before she had married Mr. Bone, she had been a U-beam. The U-beams were an ancient family, their history littered with artistic people and others who had more unusual talents, such as hypnotism, thought-reading, and bewitchery. Charlie knew he had disappointed Grandma Bone by being ordinary. Even worse, in her eyes, he was quite happy to be ordinary. When Charlie came home from school, it was always Maisie who plonked a wet kiss on his cheek and pushed a plate of something under his nose. Today Maisie had a large bump on her forehead. "Ruddy conker," she told Charlie.